First one for Professor Michael Duff. The first question on Novikov.
Hello, my name is Oleg Novikov. I'm from St. Petersburg State University. I'm here near the exit. Okay. I have probably two questions, probably one depending on your answer on the first one. Okay, this relation between supergravity and two super Ankin-Mills models, as I knew it for the first time at the level of scattering amplitudes, is somewhat disconnected from the details about gauge group of this super-Ankin-Mills series. In your result, the gauge group was the gauge transformations were instrumental in getting the diffeomorphism invariance of the supergravity. So my question is there is some influence of specific choices of the super-Ankin-Mills of the gauge group of super-Ankin-Mills models that can arise in this relation.
That's one question.
Yes, this is the first question.
Okay. Well, we wanted to do the most general thing we could do in order to get the right answer. And we found we were able to take both the left and right-handed gauge groups to be arbitrary. At least in the calculation that we did, we didn't find any constraint on the gauge groups. When we come to the extended supergravities, there is an interesting question, however, that I don't think we fully answered. And that is that the supergravity theories have electric magnetic dualities that transform the field strengths into their joules. And you might say, well, what is the Yang-Mills origin of the gravitational dualities? And the most obvious answer, you might think, is, well, it comes from the Yang-Mills dualities. However, the Yang-Mills dualities are rather subtle because they're non-abelian and you don't see them in perturbation theory. N equal 4 Yang-Mills, for example, is believed to be self-dual and that there's a symmetry between the magnetic monopoles in the theory and the fundamental particles in the theory. But that is a non-perturbative effect. And so it's a bit of a mystery how that gets fed into the gravitational self-duality, if indeed that's the reason for it. Now, in the case of Yang-Mills self-duality, or duality, if the gauge group is simply laced, the dual theory gives you back the same gauge group, but if it isn't, the dual theory gives you back a different gauge group. So that's a little more, that sounds like it might be imposing some constraint on the choice of gauge group. It might tell you, for example, that the left hand had to be the dual of the right hand. I don't know. So there are some issues that haven't been resolved that may constrain the gauge groups. But at the level of the calculation I was doing this morning, we don't see those subtleties.
Okay. Thanks for that. That was very interesting. But I still have the second question. It is about what would be the result if we get one or both of these Yang-Mills in the planar limit?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
If one or both of these Yang-Mills models are taken in the planar in the planar limit, in the limit of the infinite colors.
I'm sorry. My hearing's not so good.
Well, okay, I'll try maybe a bit further. If we consider one or both of these Yankee-Mills models in the planar limit.
In the planar?
Planar limit. Yes, planar.
What's the question?
What could you say about the result of such a product?
Well, we haven't looked at the dynamics of the Yang-Mills. Everything I said this morning was addressing a simpler question. How do we derive the gravitational symmetries starting from the Yang-Mills symmetries? The whole issue of the dynamics, which is a very important one, is something we will address after we've understood the symmetries. And at the moment, I don't have anything to say about that.
Okay,
so
thank you.
An interesting question, but we haven't looked at that.
Okay, thank you.
It is just related to the question. As you know, Zvi Bern was giving lectures last year and the year before at RHA, and he was addressing these dynamic questions very much. Now, are you talking really about the same thing, or is it a different kind of curvature that he is considering?
I think we're talking about the same thing, but the connection is not at all obvious. He's doing on-shell momentum space scattering amplitudes. We're doing off-shell fields. And somewhere along the line they must meet. But we haven't yet made contact with what he's doing. We're very interested in what he's doing. And I feel sure there must be contact. But it's not there yet. For example, let me see if I can pull up the right. One thing we worried about was whether the we have gravity is the square of Yang-Mills, but we have to take care of these indices. And the way we chose to do it was to put the scalar, sandwich the scalar field between the two Yang-Mills. You might say, well, maybe you could put this on the other side of the equation. And if you look at the work of Bern and collaborators, what they find is indeed that the product of the two spin 1 amplitudes is a spin 2 amplitude times the spin 0 amplitude. So we're a bit mystified about whether this is the inverse of a field that belongs here and whether that inverse is the field that Cachazzo and collaborators use. That's one issue. But what we believe, from our point of view, is that these four fields live in different worlds. This is supergravity, and in the maximal case, it can't couple to anything else, it's unique. These are Yang-Mills fields, which again, in the maximal case, couldn't couple to anything, even if we wanted them to. You don't have to be maximal, but I'm picking the maximal case to illustrate my point. And this is the phi cubes theory, according to the Cachazzo and Hodges, who first proposed it. So it's not that we have gravity coupled to Yang-Mills or Yang-Mills coupled to a scalar. We have each of the fields has its own dynamics, and they're related in this way. Now, if that is true, if I look at endpoint functions, correlation functions of this field, it will factorize into correlation functions of these three fields. And that factorization should be on all orders. If they're non-interacting with one another, it should be true to all orders. So if you have correlation functions which factorize to all orders, that may go some way towards explaining why one is amplitude is the square of the other, perhaps. So to answer your question, we believe there is a connection, but there's lots more work to be done.
Thank you. Was your question answered? Then, next question is Sopenko.
I'm sorry, I'm deaf in the left ear, not very good in the right one. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, what is the right product? That's a question we struggled with for a long time. And first of all, you have to do something with these indices. You can't just leave them floating around, because the gravity theory has no Yang-Mills quantum numbers. So we have to do something, and that's the easiest thing to do. And this field, we weren't the first people to introduce it. Hodges, I think, was the first. He found it useful in his amplitude calculations, and we find it fits the bill in explaining where the indices go. So our field is in the bi-adjoint representation, G left cross G right, and so was his. The next question is why we have these convolutions, and that seems to be necessary in order that we avoid the Leibniz rule, because if you have a Leibniz rule, there are too many derivatives and you don't derive the correct gravitational transformation rules from those of Yang-Mills. So our justification, in a way, is that a posteriori, it works. At some deeper level, why is it what we've said? We're not sure, but that's what, if we use that, we get the right answer. That's the best reply I can give.
Okay. Second question is about Leibniz theorem.
Yeah?
First of all, we can consider the reduction of 11 dimensional supergravity down to 2 dimensions. And in that case, we have infinite dimensional affine with algebra E spine. So is there any analog for affine the algebra of Leibniz square?
Very good question, yes. Let me have a look. The magic pyramid focused on dimensions 3, 4, 6, and 10. But if you like, you can fill in the gaps and do it for the other dimensions. And you get the so-called U-duality groups, E8 in 3, E7 in 4, and so on. Now, as you correctly point out, if you go down to 2 dimensions, this U-duality group becomes an infinite dimensional group, as Cremer and Julia first noted. So, if what we're saying is true, we ought to be able to derive those infinite dimensional symmetries from Yang-Mills as well. We haven't addressed that yet, but you are right to say that ought to follow if what we're saying is true.
Thank you. Next question, Marani.
Mike, I also have two questions for you. I'm here.
Oh, hi.
So the first question is, you mentioned that, of course, not all supergravity theories have off-shell formulations. And so I was asking whether, I was wondering whether you might get some linearized off-shell formulations of supergravity starting from Young-Mills theories by your tensoring procedure. So that's my first question.
Good, off-shell. Well, before I answer the supergravity question, let me just make a remark about the Young-Mills, because there's something interesting here. It's well known, it's been known for many years, that if you look at the off-shell Young-Mills theories, if you look at the Young-Mills theories, you can find off-shell formulations for all except the maximally supersymmetric ones, strangely enough. So you can't do it at all in D equals 10. You can do it for the N equal 2 theory in D equals 6. You can do it for the N equal 1 theory in D equals 6. You can do it for the 1 and 2 theories in D equals 4. And you can do it for the 1, 2, 4 theories in D equals 3. But the maximal one, 1, 2, 4, 8, it's well known that the algebra only closes on shell, not off shell. Now, we reformulated these theories in terms of octonions in the case of the maximal theory, quaternions in case of the half maximal, complex and real. So now we go through the business of closing the algebra, and we find, sure enough, the old result, but in a new framework. The reason why the maximal theories failed to close off shell in this language is precisely because of the non-associativity of the octonions. So there's a new way of looking at an old result, that the maximal theories only close on shell. It's got to do with the non-associativity of the octonions. Now we take the square, and of course we can't get off-shell supergravity theories by squaring unless we have the off-shell Young-Mills theory to start with.
So you never get the maximal off-shell supergravity?
So we don't know. We don't get anything that wasn't already known, no.
Okay. My second question concerns that strange scalar in the biadjoint that you use for your product that does not satisfy Leibniz's rule. So, if I understand well, this scalar is not, is not in the supergravity theory nor in the Young-Mills. So it's some external spectator scalar. So how can you constrain it in the sense that you said that it should have a cubic
yes.
theory, but why?
That wasn't our result, and in fact, we've yet, at the linearized level, we don't need to know that it obeys a phi cube theory. It's a very interesting question. I believe that when we do the nonlinear case, that issue should arrive. But at the linearized case, we don't need to know that. This was Cachazzo's result, because if you think about two structure constants, one in the G left, one in G right, and you have a field in the biadjoint, you can form a cubic invariant. And that's where why they say it's a phi cube theory. But it cannot be part of the Young-Mills, nor can it be part of the gravity.
So where is it?
It lives in its own little phi cube world, doing its own thing.
which you are, I mean, you are guessing that is not related nor interacting with Young Mills nor supergravity.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not a physical field, it's just a technical tool. I don't know. You have some guess about it?
So far, yes. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question by Tokareva.
Is there a possibility to construct gravity from two vector fields without supersymmetry? Can we do something without supersymmetry?
Can we square non-supersymmetric Young Mills to get non-supersymmetric gravity? Is that the question?
Yes.
I could equally well have put the fermions to zero in what I was doing this morning, and everything would go through. So supersymmetry does not seem essential. It's just that it keeps you on the straight and narrow. There's lots of consistency checks you can do in supersymmetric theories that helps you to keep track of what's going on. But it didn't have to be supersymmetric.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Hello, I'm your Adel Salek of Kyiv State University. In your talk, the crucial observation was, like, before going to the squaring part, was that the gamma matrices of the Clifford algebras could be, like, re-expressed through the through division algebras, through their structure constants. Okay, and those division algebras are the R, C, H, all the octonions. But those division algebras and, like, their dimensions were special for many reasons, and geometric ones too. Could one say, without looking at the gamma matrices and the Clifford algebras, that those division algebras should appear in our theory, and those are the only ones possible, and can there be a geometric explanation for this?
I got the beginning and I got the end, but not the point in the middle. I apologize.
Okay.
Do I have any explanation for?
Is there, like, how we got the division algebras in your talk? You re-expressed the gamma matrices through their structure constants, like, for example, the octonionic structure constants, right?
Did you?
Yeah. You could. Okay, so once again, the crucial observation before you did the squaring part was to notice that the gamma matrices of the Clifford algebras could be re-expressed through the structure constants of the octonions and other division algebras. Okay, this is a statement. So the question is, division algebras and their dimensions, it's like they appear very special due to many reasons, algebraic ones and geometric ones too, like the Adams theorem and are there geometric reasons to use those division algebras without looking at the Clifford thing?
Geometric reasons to...
I got the geometric reasons to...
For the division algebra. Division.
I'm still not sure. Are there geometric reasons for the division algebras in which context now? In the squaring?
In the context of the Young Mills theory and the further squaring of it.
Yeah. Well, I think there are, yes, because if you go back to the magic square, historically, the mathematicians were trying to give a geometric picture of the exceptional groups, the E7, the E6, the E8. That was their motive, and they succeeded in doing that with this construction, which involves, in some sense, squaring the division algebras to get the Lie algebras, and the exceptional groups appear along this final row and column. Now, when we come to do the physics, something similar happens. The Yang-Mills series have this RCHO interpretation, and when we square them to get the gravity theory, we get the same exceptional groups that the mathematicians got. And so that same geometrical relation between division algebras and Lie algebras persists in the physics as it did in the mathematics. So that's presumably the underlying reason why we're finding what we're finding. We're finding it for the same reason that the mathematicians found it. And there is, if you want more geometrical interpretation, there's something else that I didn't mention except very briefly. Yes. The scalar fields in our supergravity theory belong to a coset G over H. G is the non-compact symmetries that appear in the magic square, and H are the maximal compact subgroups. Now, those cosets, it turns out, have a geometrical interpretation in terms of projective planes. And I refer you to these papers, which explains that in greater detail. We've only just started to look at this, but I think the message would be that there is indeed much more geometry behind what I was telling you than we've so far been able to uncover. So the short answer to your question is yes, it's all very geometrical.
Thank you very much. I hope this answers the question, more or less.
Yeah, partially. Thanks.
Thank you. So I'd like to thank Michael Duff again for very nice lectures and vivid discussions.